Right, this is the Cool Shit Podcast. Each week we round up the latest cool shit, helping us think different and keep inspired. What makes it in, what gets left out, and what gets challenged. Is it cool, is it shit?
Or does it cross the magic threshold and come bona fide, certified cool shit?
Welcome to the editors meeting.
Episode 60.
What was that? It was a race car, obviously.
Well, we're trying to do an express one, aren't we?
Yeah.
There's fewer of us because
we're
trialing an express version. Gina, have you seen her? Yes, I have. She's sitting next to me. How are you doing?
I'm all right, but I've got a broken toe.
You got a broken toe?
I do, and I thought I'd tell everyone about it.
Always some drama with you.
There is always some drama, so you've got to start it off. Right. It's also been ages since I've been on the podcast, so I was really excited to be back, so I'm announcing that I am back with my broken toe.
I mean, like you've said it now, so yeah. We kind of have to dig in. How did you break your toe?
I broke her toe.
You broke her
James
toe.
Pushed me. No, I stopped it on the corner of the bed.
Oh, very unexciting.
Not exciting.
Jeez. All right,
not
let's
exciting.
Move off that boring topic. James, the editor-in-chief of the Cool Shit Podcast, aka the Little Chef. How you doing?
Yeah, good, mate. Ten toes intact.
Feels like a long time since we've been here.
It does. Well, we've never been here.
No, we're in a new room.
So it might sound echoey.
For all you excited listeners.
Awful, that's why.
Yeah. Did I introduce myself?
No, you didn't. No, you that's didn't. Gareth.
That's me, Gareth Carter.
That's the only intro he needs.
I can't even spell my name, let alone say it.
He's dyslexic.
You love telling people I'm dyslexic.
Every other episode kind of gets in
you have to
somehow.
Remind everyone, don't you? James, how has it been in the world of cool shit this week?
Yeah, it's been all right, because I had a bit of a sabbatical of cool shit for about a month, didn't I, as well? So I've quite enjoyed being back into it.
Yeah.
Gives me a day off doing actual work, yeah.
Yeah, nice. Have you written this week's cool shits?
If we want to peel back the layers on the onion that is cool shit, then yes, I have, actually.
Okay, good. Because sometimes, you know, you've had other writers in for you because you've been so busy.
I know.
So busy, James, so busy.
Yeah. Very busy businessman doing business, yeah.
All right, then. Well, we got a topic to talk about first?
We have got a topic, and it's something that I can tell from your shirt you know a great deal about. We're talking fashion. High fashion.
I had a meeting today, and I walked in, and the person I was having a meeting with, the first thing they said was, oh, I love your shirt.
Really?
Yeah, and they looked fashionable, James.
Wow. Imagine if you ironed it.
Right, yeah,
I'd be unstoppable.
You cycle in, so it's going to crease, right?
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, dyslexic cyclist. Let's carry on.
Right, so Milan, Fashion Week took place over the last week, bringing together all the biggest names, brands and faces in fashion. And when I was looking through stories, because obviously we look for like a main sort of cultural topic, and I'm not really on top of the various fashion weeks, but it was this that just kept popping up over and over again. And I don't know about you, but when I look at like some of these fashion weeks, it's so high fashion-y and out there that it actually makes you feel kind of detached from fashion itself. And I've been looking at a lot of kind of comments on the internet of people kind of moaning, saying, what is this? So I guess my initial question is, should we give a shit about Fashion Week? Does it actually have any kind of cultural influence on the next gen, on Gen Z? And we've got a few stories that we can dig into
Interesting that it's popped up on your algorithm. So I'm just doing a very small Gen Z test now. Did it pop up on your algorithm, Gina?
It did, yeah.
Yeah?
I found it quite interesting. Especially London and Milan, it felt like it wasn't really related to fashion directly. It was all kind of... So London, it was like kind of fashion brands rooting themselves back into reality almost, because you know you had like Burberry and that kind of Norman's calf pop up, and then with Milan it was all this like tech stuff, so it's like it's really far from fashion, but it'd be interesting to see how it links back into it.
Well, isn't that the point that's you're kind of talking about, James? Fashion has pivoted a lot of the times. When I think about these sort of like these big tentpole fashion weeks, there's always some controversy attached to it that carries the message that Fashion Week is on, right?
Yeah, and I think the other point with that, with what you're saying, where it's kind of you see these themes emerge, is that there's so much noise that I think everybody probably feels the need to at least get somewhat conceptual in order to kind of break through that noise, rather than just going, here's a load of clothes, don't you like them?
On a catwalk.
Exactly.
Which, again, when I'm seeing all this Fashion Week stuff on like Instagram or whatever, I'm seeing less catwalks and more the kind of other bits that they're doing on the site.
But isn't that social media now? Like, so, you know, traditionally, you know, London Fashion Week, etc., there would be surviving through publications. Mm. But now you've got people there, people that, you know, doing bits of video, yeah. like getting involved in the stuff outside. Yeah. It seems like you do get lots more bits around it nowadays that gets brought to you.
Mm. Do you wanna get into one of the things that caught my eye?
Yeah, go on.
Well, because Gina, you said that there was this kind of tech theme. Boss enlisted Sophia the robot, who's a humanoid, speaks 18 languages and supposedly experiences emotions, and they got her to walk the runway as part of their Techtopia show.
Yeah, so if just going back to your original question, do you think this is G-ing up Gen Z then?
Well, that's the thing, because I don't know about you, but like, it potentially feels a little bit lame. And I don't know if it's because we spend so much time talking about it, but anything, any sort of creative execution, or a lot of creative executions that I see now that involve either AI or robots, seem to kind of go for that sort of novelty of, isn't this wacky? And it seems stupid to say, but kind of having a robot walking the catwalk almost feels like passé now, as if it's kind of obvious. And I'm not sure it demonstrates. I think it's kind of thinking about there's an element of what are young people talking about, and it's AI robots, oh yeah, great. But I'm not sure this demonstrates any kind of immense creativity. It just demonstrates having the budget to get three robots.
When I think about Boss, I also don't think about them being at the forefront of innovation either.
No, I think about my mate Kurt Brown.
Who's Kurt Brown?
Yeah, he's Kurt Brown.
Just a friend of mine who wears a lot of Hugo Boss.
Shout out, Kirk. Hope you're listening. I do agree with you, though. The robot was clunky. Mm. Like, I feel like I've seen a billion iterations
She's
of it.
She's a famous robot, though.
She is a famous robot.
Okay, so give me the history of the robot.
Didn't Will Smith
still didn't like her. I don't care if she was famous.
So, yeah, she was created by Hanson Robotics. And I mentioned, I'm surprised you didn't call me up on it, because their claim is that she experiences emotions.
Which, yeah. Right. Oh, it's that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. But again, that just feels really, like, old core now. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know, from the, you know, the explosion of ChatGPT this year, which where you know it doesn't actually experience emotion, but it's really weirding you out because it seems to be able to express emotion. I felt like, you know, I don't think this robot, what's her name?
Sophia
is where it's at now. It didn't feel to me, as you're saying, that was like a wow moment. I can't believe they can do that now.
It fits their theme, but their theme, again, it's probably actually a bit lame. It was called Techtopia, and it was all about, yeah, being in like a tech-powered reality, but again, why would I guess the first thing they're thinking of is, okay, tech-powered reality, let's put a robot on the runway. So it does feel a bit like outdated and kind of useless.
Do you think what it is as well is, now that kind of AI in many ways, I think, is actually more impressive at this point than robotics, because I guess the hardware hasn't necessarily caught up with the software yet. So when you see the robots compared to what ChatGPT can do, a lot of the actual kind of the physical embodiments of that technology haven't quite caught up.
And you're right, like 6 years ago, I was really impressed by Boston Dynamics. But now I'm like, yeah, AI has just surpassed that in my brain.
Exactly. If anything, like the physical skeleton seems to be the part that lets down the technology, yeah. Which I guess, and I understand they can't exactly put ChatGPT in a frock and get it to walk down a catwalk. But then I'm not sure if this is the answer to kind of get that idea of tech across.
It doesn't feel that as cutting edge as they probably
No,
think
it doesn't
it
feel futuristic.
Feel.
No, exactly.
It
Well, look, moving on swiftly then, like Avavav, anyone see what they did?
No.
So they had a great runway show where literally the models are like thrown onto stage, like they're running late, half dressed and like
very,
putting on
very
things.
Very relevant, you know?
I thought it was really good. Like they were like stomping on, looking angry. I thought it was really good because fashion does take itself very seriously, or it's known to, right? And I thought it was a really good way of having a poke at fashion while embracing it. And I thought like the outfits looked cool. I thought it was pretty lo-fi. When I think about some of the stuff that's been in the fashion weeks, the Balenciaga mud walk, some of the stuff that Kanye West was doing where people look kind of scary and prisoner-like, I thought it was really funny. It was pretty lo-fi to do, and I appreciate an idea where it's so effective you don't have to do a lot. It's an attitude. I was a big fan of that.
Yeah, I think again it's what I was saying before, like apart from this tech stuff, it's almost brands like rooting themselves back into reality a little bit, trying to be like relevant and kind of engage with a wider audience and not maybe just higher end people, because it all feels a bit less high end, and I don't know why.
I think it's probably because it's more accessible now.
Yeah,
I think
yeah.
As in like not accessible in terms of price point, but just because of social media.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and you know, everyone's got a label somewhere within. Like, you just have to go on a train these days, and you're going to see, like, you know, high end labels everywhere, right?
And I think kind of comparing it to the previous one, it like contrasts with the Sophia the robot stuff, because it's by comparison low budget but quite striking. Like, I saw, like, they put up the name of the brand in post-it notes at the back, and by stripping everything back and injecting like an element of humor, it, which is kind of what you're saying, it undercuts some of like the pretentiousness that we tend to associate with high fashion.
We were looking at some of the comments on that, weren't we? And
very
quite
mixed,
interesting.
Very mixed.
Really mixed, but loads of comments. Yeah, the worst thing you could do is you know, put a lot of thought into something and people to be like, yeah, all right. It was getting some people angry. They were talking about it being too artsy, like, just go back to, you know, like, art school, this is fashion. But every sort of like fourth or fifth comment, there was someone dissecting why it was brilliant, weren't they?
Yeah, well, it was, yeah, it was polarizing. And I think even that in itself is a win, because I think when they're, I don't think anyone who's in fashion wants to wants to get everyone on board to love their brand, because they're not fucking boohoo.com or whatever. And kind of what you said, some people are just saying, what is this? I don't get it. The standard people who probably don't have any idea, like, or don't care about fashion at all. Then some people, like you said, are saying this is art, not fashion. But kind of to that point that we said earlier, that it necessarily has to be somewhat conceptual. And then there, every like, yeah, fifth comment, there's someone saying at least they're trying to do something creative to stand out, which I think is probably the way that we came down in this.
Yeah. So we just did another one of our white papers, which was named What, Gina? Testing you, it's your department.
The next agenda, next gen on luxury.
And it's interesting because, like, going back to your first question, James, we spoke to a guy called Martin Rochard. He's a great guy. He's got his own fashion label called Apartment Rochard. And he describes it as a washing machine, in that you have, you know, two cultures at either side of fashion. You have, you know, what you see on the street, urban street culture, that's, you know, streetwear that's embraced high-end fashion. And then you have what he calls fashion nerds. I'm doing a French accent, I shouldn't. I'm sorry, Martin, if you're listening to this. But those people that know the designers, like, know the materials, are really excited for the next drop and are already looking forward to what's happening in like 2026. That group is far smaller than you and I, the people in the middle that, you know, like a bit of fashion, but, you know, aren't at that end of it. And then that sort of very cool, you know, hip hop culture, again, that makes up a bigger dearth at the bottom. But he was saying those people are really important because it's a washing machine effect where the people in the middle, as he describes, get brainwashed by those two polarizing cultures around fashion. So to that point, I think, you know, that's where these fashion weeks do have an effect. And like you're saying, it's all over socials, right?
Yeah, and also I think there's a distinction that's worth being drawn between a runway and then like an actual brand. And the runways are, that I feel like that's where people tend to be a bit more creative and have a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And like, I remember there was Kid Super, who's an American New York-based designer who did a show for Louis Vuitton. And I don't think any of the clothes were kind of actually going to be for sale, but it was more to just demonstrate like an attitude, a vibe, a way of thinking, a concept. So this is kind of to, I guess, grab attention and get people talking. Because then what I did, I looked at this video of the runway, and then you go to the brand, and it's a clothing brand. Whereas a lot of the outfits in this, you're not going to wear them walking down the street. But it's a way of engaging people, and I guess expressing like a brand personality or irreverence in this case, to get people on board with the message.
Tell you what, there was a lot of protests, wasn't there? That was another thing that kept on popping up, you know, people taking to the runway that shouldn't be there. Mm. That was at New York, I think, like, you know, New York was pretty recent, wasn't it? It was like,
yeah, there was something in London. Has London happened? Yeah,
London's happened.
Yeah, that was, and people protested against Burberry, I think, for that. Yeah, I think that was also PETA, because for this one here, it was, there was someone from PETA, Peter, however you want to pronounce it, went on to the runway during a Gucci show to protest a bit against Gucci using skins from, I think, lizards and crocodiles.
Yeah, so that's another thing that fashion has to, again, reconcile with those audiences, those people that see high fashion as well, these events even as just a high profile way of making a stand against something, and then again linking that back to whatever that fashion house is doing, right?
Yeah, and again, this links back to what we were talking about in the next agenda, which is like if brands aren't fulfilling their, or seem to be fulfilling their kind of social responsibilities, then they become targets. And you can kind of end up with quite a lot of egg on your face quite publicly. And also, even as someone who's not too badly afflicted with a sense of morality, I looked at this and I went on the PETA website from here, and then they explain in fairly kind of gory detail how Gucci in this case are decapitating lizards to make bags. And you see that, and it's pretty hard to see that and not think, yeah, that is quite messed up. That shouldn't be happening.
Even you.
Even you. And I mean, I still don't really care, but I appreciate that it's a bad thing. So if someone was inclined to care about these little Lizzies, then I can see how that would be incredibly off-putting for you. And with there, like we said, with there being so many other brands out there now as well, and particularly like Av, who are doing something different, when you've got the kind of the ones who have been around forever, the sort of heritage luxury brands, if they're not seen to be doing everything they should be, then particularly young people, principled young people, will just jump ship.
Yeah. You are the opposite of a principled young person, aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. I'm an amoral old man.
All right then, James, what's next?
What's next? Bread. You want some bread? I'll give you some bread.
Who doesn't like bread? Yeah. Oh, yeah, people with wheat intolerance. Oh, no, my IBS.
Right, so Warburton's, as in the bakery from Bolton, enlisted Samuel L. Jackson, of all people, to star in their latest ad.
Before we talk about it, shall we listen to a bit?
We should.
Mr. Warburton is...
Hi, I'm Jonathan Warburton, chairman of the UK's largest family bakery. Now, I'm a good guy, family man. But sometimes Johnny Lovely Crumpets won't cut it. Sometimes you need Samuel L. Jackson to play you in a commercial, because when I see this from Steve up in my socials, it unleashes a furious anger in me. Jonathan, I love your toasty loaf, but I've seen other toasty loaves in the shops that look exactly the same. What gives? What gives? What gives, Tweety Pie, is me, Jonathan Warburton. I give.
Yes. I mean, fury, like a baker's
score.
I don't know.
I like that line.
Look, straight up, I watched the long cut, the sort of like 2.5 minute version, and I fucking love it. Mm. What strikes me straight away is like two things. It's always funny, Hollywood, America in, you know, parochial England. It's just a funny joke that just keeps on giving, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's the kind of the juxtaposition of fish out of water, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, sure. And the other thing that we talked about quickly when we were chatting about it, James, is the use of that real big tentpole advert. So it has a life beyond broadcast. Because we're like, we all know that, you know, adverts get skipped. There's a 2.5 minute version which tells you they probably haven't taken that out as an ad buy. That's probably they would have played it once or twice. They're not going to play that all the time.
I saw this first on the telly though, and I'm pretty sure it was maybe it wasn't the full one, but it was still a long advert.
Yeah. But I mean, these things have like a great opportunity to feel like, you know, just great content that you'd see on socials, in publications. It shows an understanding of how you should use that huge budget to make something like that. I gave you the example of the Sky Sports ad that came out. Was it the biggest show? What was it called? The
greatest show on earth.
Yeah, I mean, like, that probably had infinitely more money even than that, although I reckon Samuel L. Jackson
I reckon they've spent a pretty penny on this.
Yeah, right. But, I mean, is that going to do anything beyond you know, like, a bit of broadcast vanity? I don't think it is. Whereas that's just fucking great. Like, I love the fact that it touches on Pulp Fiction, touches on a load of his movies. He's a really likable character. Anyone can listen to Samuel L. Jackson. Like, he's one of those people you'll just listen to. Mm. So just straight away there, you'll easily listen to Samuel L. Jackson for 2.5 minutes, especially when he's doing a show like that and being really funny.
Yeah, when Samuel L. Jackson talks, you tend to listen. and he's already so kind of inherently likable, which makes this so shareable. And kind of what you said with like the Pulp Fiction thing, like, they're also like, I guess, leveraging cultural cachet from other sources through Samuel L. Jackson himself, and then also like the Tarantino, the obvious Tarantino influence with the casting and the music. But then even like, I don't know if this is intentional, but like the one person monologue walking towards camera also feels like very Scorsese-ish. So it's almost like they've mashed together the two best known and most loved directors of our time to as influences to kind of create this, which is just...
But then in rural Northern Britain, that's why it works so well.
Yeah, no, exactly, because it's the intensity doesn't match the surroundings, which is what makes it funny.
Quick quiz. How old do you reckon that Samuel L. Jackson is, people?
Like 74? 65.
Oh, fuck off, James.
I think he's like 65.
No, right? He's 74.
Is he really?
Oh, yeah. He's actually 74.
I'm always surprised how old he is, because he looks so good.
He does look good, yeah.
That's great.
Warburtons is like a really down-to-earth brand. That's what they're sort of like trading on. Somehow it works for that. Do you know what I mean? It's like got a real down-to-earth feel.
No, so the advert doesn't have a down-to-earth feel. The brand does, but most bread adverts are really cringy. You're like, you know, it's like this kid running down the street.
Yeah, it's like
for
a
dinner.
Farmer who you're meant to
look. Yeah, so that's what I like. Warburtons have kind of always done these adverts.
I think you've just described like the most famous Hovis ad from the 70s, but anyway.
Yeah, but do you know what I mean? But even other like breads... I guess brands do things like that.
I do think it's down to earth. In a weird way, I think it's down to earth because I think it's kind of like box office mainstream and just the way that, like, you know, the characters in it that he comes across, the people are like, who's that at the door? And they're like, who is he actually supposed to be? Jonathan Warburton. I don't know. I felt it really works for their consumer in a way that's like completely... gets likability and sort of like that down-to-earth feel. It somehow, by even using a Hollywood star, it feels like he's one of them somehow. And I don't know how that works.
There's only one bit that I don't like, and it's at the very end. And
when
I feel
they
like
talk about
bottled it.
And this here is the real Warburton's toaster.
No, I get what they're trying to do by doing that, though.
Something like that, J-Dubs?
I couldn't have said it better myself.
What do you know what?
Like?
That better
like
be
that
the
bit.
Real Jonathan Warburton
yeah,
at the end.
Yeah, it's not.
Yeah, I know, right? What, you didn't like the bit where he meets his real alter ego?
No, really, I think it just makes it a bit cheesy at the end. I couldn't have said it better myself. Like, I don't know, I think the real Jonathan Warburton said, I want to be in this advert. I mean, I don't hate it, but I would have preferred it if it was like, I don't know, if there was a bit of a kind of cliffhanger ellipsis as if Samuel L. Jackson has actually taken over the Warburton Empire or whatever. But I'm being fussy.
We can pretty much say, though, we're all in agreement that we like that ad, yeah?
I like it, but I won't go and buy Warburtons now. It hasn't made me want to buy Warburtons, you know what I mean?
But
I
has it made it's... you feel favourably towards Warburtons,
Not
though?
Really, no. I just think it's a cool advert, but I almost forget it's about bread because I'm focusing on Samuel L. Jackson, right?
Okay, so Gina... has been unaffected by this advert.
Yeah, I don't hate it, but I do. I think it's cool, but I don't know what their job was to do with that. Like, what are they trying to gain? What was their objective? Sorry, to be doing that, right?
I think it's one of the like leading bread brands, isn't it? So like, there'll just be a certain amount, which is just
staying relevant, funny.
Like to stay relevant. But right. Like, you make a fair point. Is that can convert the layman bread person Hovis?
Well, I was going to say, but what bread do you buy anyway then?
Usually like a sourdough from.
But that's what I'm saying. I don't think it's converting.
Yeah, you're the wrong consumer.
I don't think it's converting the artisan bread community. But
I've watched Gina has got a t-shirt. Every weekend she's hanging out with the artisan bread community.
But I do think if you don't really care about if you're just buying a loaf from the shops and you're then confronted with Hovis versus Warburtons, I wouldn't be surprised if this seeps into your subconscious somewhere and makes you feel favourably towards them.
Yeah, I'd agree. Like, I can try and buy my artesian bread for Betty, my daughter, but she just wants white shit bread. And if I do see that orange packet, I'll be like, I'm getting you today.
Yeah, who's Hovis? Who's Mr. Hovis?
Anything else, James?
A bit of controversy in the art world. We're doing fashion and art this week. It's very high and bread, yeah. Fashion, art, and bread. So basically, a Danish artist, Jens Honning, was forced to return the £38,000 paid to him
Amazing
by the Kunstmuseum in Aalborg for his work, Take the Money and Run, because he was commissioned to do some work, and he handed in two completely blank canvases, and our judges forced him to give the money back.
Blank white canvases, which really sort of hammers home the point as well.
But also,
fuck on this!
But also, what I like is that he's done nothing, but he only gave them two. So it's not just one blank canvas, it's nothing twice, which is great.
And the title of the work was what, James?
Take the Money and Run.
That's so smart.
I know, I like it.
I love it.
But the thing is, right, So they've booked him, essentially. They knew he was coming. They've seen the art. They've put it on their walls. People have paid, I'm assuming, to go to an exhibition, right? Mm-hmm. They can't ask for it back.
Well, no, this is the thing, because I think the I can't remember the name, but the owner of the gallery claimed to be fairly bemused immediately, but then exhibited them anyway, kind of just, because I've got them now, whatever. But then to your point, I think the sheer act of just exhibiting them then validates it as art, if you're getting people to come in and see it. And, like, just the fact, I think, because obviously, I guess the point behind it is that it's lampooning the very world to which it belongs, which totally, is the kind of, like, the art world of, like, a banana sellotape to a walkabee art, so this can as well.
A little bit like that Avavab thing again. It's taking the piss out of the, you know, like, the industry in which it inhabits, right? Feels a bit Banksy-esque to me, doesn't it?
I was going to say that, because if he did something like that,
everyone would be like, wow.
People would absolutely love it. I thought the same thing. But also, the artist has said that the work is that I've taken their money. Like, that is the work that he's taken their money, right?
Yeah.
Which, again, it's a great point.
I guess it depends on the nature of the contract and what he was booked to.
And he said if he was
commissioned to do a mural of Sylvester Stallone, then...
I love that's the first thing that comes into your head. When I get rich, the first thing I ask for is a mural of Sylvester Stallone for a bathroom.
if he was commissioned to do that, then I kind of understand the complaint. If it was a fairly open-ended brief and it was kind of dazzle us with your conceptual creativity, Jens, then I don't really see how they've got a leg to stand on. But that's why I'm shocked. It's been decided, though. There's a court, the highest court in the Netherlands, Denmark, close enough, have ordered him to give this money back. And also, this started like about a year ago as well. It's been rumbling away. So he's probably spent all that money by now as well. So this literally is out of pocket for him.
38 grand he's got to pay back.
Yeah, I think it's out of order. I'm like, I'm with the artist. I mean, like, if I walked into the room and someone subjectively asked me, is there art? Well, I'd be like, no, I don't think so, yeah? If I was, you know, it was hung on someone's wall. But knowing, as you've said, it's called Take the Money and Run, knowing that he was booked to do something, then isn't the whole experience of it art in itself, right?
Don't get me wrong. I think he's a shithouse. Like, I think he's absolutely trolling. But I guess it's kind of probably exposing the hypocrisy of this modern art museum, who would probably be the type who would be inclined to say that anything can be art, depending on your interpretation of it. Showing that seemingly doesn't apply when it leaves that person out of pocket, and all of a sudden your material concerns overcome your ideology, I guess.
I guess it's just a limit to it, though, isn't there? You're looking at nothing.
Yeah.
They paid him for a blank canvas.
Has anyone actually taken a crap yet and put that as art?
I'm pretty sure there was a filled nappy that sold for some money or something.
See, there you go.
And there was definitely... What's his name? Deschamps was...
The
urinal.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Why not?
I quite like that, though.
I like that. He was the one, I think, someone broke one of his works, a sculpture, and then he said, alas, now it is finished.
Wait, what?
What accent was that?
That wasn't any accent. That was artist accent. Yeah.
Where do people go and find cool shit?
Of course, it's been a while. They go to zachagency.com/cool-sht.
All right. Thanks very much, Gina. Thanks very much, James. We will see you. When will we see people again?
In two weeks' time. Are we booking you lot in?
All right, fine, okay.
In a couple of weeks.
Until then, goodbye.
Bye. Bye.